Riley Longworth and Shane Palmer, and they're putting on a show down at the Butterfly Club. You can't escape an Aussie boy. Hello, Riley. Hello, Shane. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Manny. Good morning.
Thanks. Cheers.
Yeah. Now, tell us about the show.
So You Can't Escape an Aussie Boy is a three-man play that follows the journey of Dan, Stephen and Tim, three lovable but short-sighted knuckleheads who kind of fall into taking over their suburban football club on the promise of making it great again.
And we were talking before that we started having a chat that a lot of the themes of manipulation and wish fulfillment are actually also involved in your play.
Massively so, yeah. It's I've been following very closely over the last couple of years or so that the capacity people have to get behind a movement where they're able to kind of throw their hands up and be like, oh good, it's all going to be fine. It's all going to be wonderful. I don't have to do anything. I just have to back the people with the loudest voice here who are promising the world. But don't worry about the details of it. It'll all be fine. Just don't worry about that. We'll be great again kind of thing. And then they're off.
Yeah. It's the classic con. Or the classic con is that you offer the people exactly what they want.
Totally. Yeah. And again, more than happy to sort of buy in regardless of experience or actual plan or tangible solutions or path down the road.
Yeah. It's like there was a poster that used to be on the walls around Melbourne that said, hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a plan. So tell us about, because you wrote it, Shane.
I did, yeah. So I wrote it originally back in 2019 after I got back from touring a solo show to Edinburgh. Pieced it together pretty quickly back then, and then we were set to go on stage again at the Butterfly Club in March 2020. And of course, nothing went on stage in March 2020 around the world.
No, that's right.
I got bumped back and bumped back and bumped back. And then I got back from a short stint in Vancouver around Easter this year, caught up with Riley and another mate and said, what are you doing, Riley, this year? So,
doing nothing.
Do you want to do a show?
Yeah. Sounds like a lark.
And that was about 6 pints of Guinness in, and then sort of woke up the next morning like, ooh, yeah, this could actually work. And so we revised the script structurally and story-wise, kicked in a third character, which is good because now I've got more people to mess around with on stage with, and pulled it in. It's funny kind of updating the... not quite the message of the story.
Well, it's sort of satire, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So it's a lot less angry than what the script was a few years ago.
Well, that's interesting. What did you discover? What are your key finds from trying to investigate why people can be so flim-flammed and perhaps also give up their power?
I think people love the idea of the myth. And if you spin a good enough story with enough conviction, it gets people on board kind of thing. It's a little bit almost like the Pied Piper. You play the right tune and people are sort of, they'll bob along to a degree.
Do you choose to look at the motivations of the characters who decide to flim-flam people?
Definitely, yeah. It's a fascinating little balance of trying to get people, especially the audience, to be like, all right, why are we rooting for these guys to succeed?
You make the audience flim-flammed as well?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's so
absolutely
cute.
Absolutely. They're really in a rut at first, and there's no sort of bearing or sense of belonging for them in their environment until they figure out this one thing that they could be really good at. They probably might not be. There's no evidence to support it, but it's like, yeah, why not? And then people get
it was an opportunity.
Them. Yeah, absolutely.
Opportunism.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah. Riley, how did you handle three people dealing with this topic?
I think I come from more of a film and TV sort of background, and I'm not a huge fan of live theatre. So most of...
Oh, really?
No, not really. So most of my directing is more just like, how can we lampoon... Like, I hate monologues at the start of shows, so how can we just turn that into a joke? So I think, like, on the satire level, I've been trying to sort of like come at it as if the whole thing is a scam.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of been the most fun for me, is just like trying to find exactly where I can sort of layer in jokes and kind of where people expect theatre to take you, and then just turn that into a giant farce.
Oh, that's interesting. So this is a fusing of a theatrical sort of normalcy, and your why you were brought in is to actually fuse it with contemporary screen time sensibility.
Yeah, I think so. And there was, I remember like reading it at the start, and there was a lot more.
Get out, no, cut, fine.
Well, yeah.
It was takes too long. I was I'm like, bored.
There's a way it could have been snappier, I think, from the start. And that's what I think we found. And because you rewrote it, I think you did like, after we agreed to do it, you did like 4 or 5 drafts, like back to back to back. And I think, yeah, it's starting to shine because the seriousness that most of these topics usually come with is something we've kind of put aside. And so we've decided, because it's a farce, it's way funnier as a result of that. And I think it plays into sort of those broader themes of sort of like, you know, we were talking about it just before, of just because these people wear the suits and they say all the things on the news, it doesn't mean they're any smarter than me. And that's kind of been the learning point of the last 6-7 years of Aussie and American politics, is you see these guys come out and they start running the country and you're like, hang on, I think he's an idiot. And then it slowly, over years, it just unravels, and then you find out they are an idiot. And that's kind of fun. And I think that's what we play with as well. It's like you've got a character who you set up as we think is going to be that fool, but then you realise the real fool is someone else who was doing the dance a little better at the start.
So. Yeah, which is interesting. And why have you decided to put it into a footy club?
Because it's not really been done. Aside from Graham Kennedy's film, The Club, which came out in the 70s, and I have still not seen it.
Oh, there was
yet.
One. deliberately. Hopwood made a film, made a play. There was a play I saw a while when I was really young. An actor, his surname's Hopgood. But anyway, it doesn't really matter.
But it's so largely kind of unexplored, but such an instantly high point of drama, I find, that you get these two worlds that kind of almost run parallel to each other and should intersect a lot more because they're kind of perfectly complementary, where the football club becomes the entire universe for the people involved in it. So I've set it at a fictional suburban one that could be sort of somewhere in Melbourne, anywhere. And
do you have personal experience of being in that sort of framework? Because I come from a country town, and not my family, but I mean, sport is more important than life itself.
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up in a country town as well, where the footy club was the centre of the universe for everything. That if even down to sort of, if you were starting a small business, you were either part of the Lions Group, the Masons, or you're in the footy club. Otherwise, you just wouldn't exist.
That's right.
And so there was.
It's an identity issue.
Definitely, yeah.
And it's also a, what do you call it? It's almost like a displacement behaviour, because it means that you don't have to actually own up to being yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You can put on the uniform, yeah.
And then you're just one of the boys, and then it's all. There's a big free pass that kind of aligns with that for some reason. So we're kind of exploring a bit of that as well. And kind of like, why?
It's a bit like an army.
There's a weird power that goes with either that navy blue suit and the mortar hat, or some kind of uniform, that it's a big weird tick for, but it's totally fine because he's the captain. So, well, we're not going to stop him. Like, he's, you know, we'll just push it under the rug kind of thing. And yeah. I think that will also transfer overseas quite a lot as well. There's a lot of,
like, it's human behaviours.
Yeah.
Basically. Oh, human behaviours in the Western context, probably.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean that there wouldn't be variations on the same theme in other cultures, but definitely not. We are really far down the line of being uniformed. I mean, we do it from the time. That's why everybody's, you go to school and this is what you do. Like when you're a little kid, and then they go to school.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing that school teaches you, is that, you know, there's an institution that will take out all of the guesswork of being social. I don't have to go and put myself out on the line as a school kid because there's other kids who are doing the same thing and they're like, well, I guess we'll be friends. And I think that's what a footy club can do for people as well, is that kind of gives you that sense of like, not just community, but also like friends, like sincere friends. And I think that's as well quite a fun line to blur with the play. Just seeing these guys sort of like talking about things, which ultimately they're just talking about their mates, but they sort of like are stepping back to talk about it as if like, no, it's all power plays and it's political, but it's really not because they're just talking about their friends.
Yeah, 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 that's right. I mean, it's quite fascinating. It must have been an interesting journey putting the play together.
Yeah, definitely. And especially from the kind of perspective of they're going to come in, they're going to completely revolutionise this institution of the local sort of community and redo it, but we're going to do it better. And yeah, we're going to, you know, we're actually going to win this time and we're going to put the money in the right direction and put the right people in place. And then as soon as, without spoiling anything, but when the temptation for the darker path makes itself available, you see how easy it is to slip down that road.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah. And the cyclical nature of the boys club is, it's just fascinating to explore. And again, treading that line between not making them almost classic Disney level, or sort of like Bond villain kind of characters. Like,
well, they're not. They're just ordinary people doing bad things.
Definitely, yeah.
Basically. And that's why it works as satire.
Right? I think so, yeah.
Drawing across the curtain. And the beauty of this, having you in, is that we get to offer two double passes, don't we?
We certainly do, yes.
Yes, yes. And we should tell them when it's on.
So the show is on at the Butterfly Club on Carson Place in the city from November the 13th until November the 18th. And all shows are at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, it's perfect.